This is the First Time Podcast.
Part reality series.
Part writer's masterclass. It's a podcast about the first time
you publish a book.
I'm Kate Mildenhall.
And I'm Catherine Collette. Welcome to The First Time. Should have been more upbeat.
You don't have to sound upbeat.
I feel depressed. I shouldn't have looked on the Goodreads website.
Okay. Start off.
All right.
You can start off with that.
Okay. Kate, this week we're talking about feelings.
We are talking about feelings. And can I say what your face looks like, Catherine? Catherine did the terrible, terrible thing of looking on the Goodreads this morning. How did it make you feel, Catherine?
Pretty low. I then subsequently Googled every author that I know, every book that I know, to get a sense of the lay of the land, and I'm still the worst.
Let's get some perspective. Your book isn't actually
out yet.
Right?
So,
but what does everyone say about Goodreads?
Well, it's for readers. Things. They don't, yeah.
Don't look at it.
So there were four reviews. One was a 5-star.
Great.
So Ruth.
Was that from you?
Shout out to Ruth. And then the others were 3 stars, which gives me an average of 3.5 stars.
How have they even read it? Who are these people?
No, I don't even feel like talking now. Okay, we just did a discussion on international rights, everyone. It's pretty, feeling fairly low.
Let's try and get some perspective on this. There are going to be ups and downs along the road.
There are.
And let me tell you that every time you look at Goodreads, that's going to be a low, because it doesn't matter.
Have you ever felt high? Do you want to know what your rating is?
No, don't tell
me. It's well over 4.
Oh, well, that's good. I'm glad, but I don't want to know, because I did look at Goodreads a lot at the start and I was terribly excited when people wrote lovely things about me. And there was one when it came out on, I don't know, Kindle. Well, it's one of the reviews on like Kindle or Amazon or something like that. And it says, not worth the price.
Ouch.
I was like, whoa, that's really unfair and unkind. But all you need to do is like follow writers on Twitter or see what writers write about Goodreads, and you'll know that this is a universal experience for authors, that they find horrible things written about them and their books on Goodreads. So you just
don't do it.
Don't do it. Don't look at it.
I will. I know that I will at a point. But I guess this brings me more broadly to think about how did you feel in the lead up to Skylarking coming out? What's normal?
What's normal, I think, is every possible emotion. So terrible fear that, you know, like the going to school naked kind of dream, that's what life is going to be like, that you are putting your entire soul and everything you've ever held dear and wanted in your entire life out on show for everybody, your family, your colleagues, the people, you know, who didn't turn up at the 20-year reunion, who you still want to impress. I don't know, all those people, like they're all going to see, right, your innermost soul in your book. So that's one of the fears. The other fear is that none of them will care to look.
Yes.
And then it will
It's true. Completely contradictory feelings at exactly the same moment.
And then there's a feeling too, I remember, you know, in the actual week that it comes out and the launch and everyone saying lovely things and it's incredible and it was like,
Do you believe them when they say the lovely things though?
Some people.
Yeah.
Some people I believed them.
Yeah.
And there's some messages that you get, you know, from people that you don't know that you know, oh my gosh, it's worth it, right? It's worth the years of pain that person just sent me a message saying, I felt like you wrote me. Or, you know, like those things are extraordinary. They are worth it. And also it's like a wedding or the birth of a child or, I don't know, graduating from something massive. It's a huge, big thing that people are also celebrating, whether or not they read your book or like it. They're celebrating you having achieved something really big in your life. So there's that massive feeling. But then, of course, there's a come down after that because you cannot maintain that adrenaline. And so then you have to ride that wave down again.
Yeah.
And if that's coupled with a little bit of late night Goodreads viewing, that low can go
right down.
How are you feeling?
Yeah, that all what you're saying feels pretty real, that both that fear on two fronts, the fear that you feel very exposed, but equally the fear that no one cares. But people do care. Like, people have been so wonderfully kind. I think the launch itself, so that's coming up on September the 3rd, you'll be there.
I most definitely will.
That has the feeling of a wedding to me, in the dreading, just that center of attention. And I can already see myself, you know, signing books and staring blankly at, you know, my uncle and saying, what's your name again?
We've talked about this. That's why you have to have the PR person there putting the post-it notes in.
Yep.
And also because you're working on another book.
Yeah, that's right. I think I feel melancholy in some ways. Like, the exciting part is that creation bit. And I think when I get the copy of the book, I'll feel a bit sad that I can't change something.
Yeah. And that's really hard. That's,
I think that it's done.
Yeah, it's that finished. It's done and it's been extracted from you and you've worked.
It's not mine anymore.
It's not yours anymore. No, it belongs. It belongs to the readers now. And I think that's a big thing. I have no answers about how you, maybe some of our listeners have answers about how you transition through that period of something being yours entirely and then letting it go with any artwork.
It's like a Tibetan monks that do sand paintings, like really, really intricate sand paintings.
Yes.
And then at the end, like, they spend so much time and they're so amazing. Mandela.
Paintings. Yes. That's totally
and then
it.
They just blow them away.
Impermanence.
Yeah.
That's entirely it. We need to hold on to these pieces of art more lightly, perhaps, Catherine. They both say from the depths of their second books. While, of course, we don't have favourites here on our show, I have to say that this episode with Annabelle Smith and Jane Rawson is one of the best. Annabelle Smith and Jane Rawson talk to us about what to expect when you're expecting a book. I'm so excited to welcome Perth author Annabelle Smith and Melbourne author Jane Rawson to The First Time. Annabelle Smith's first two novels were published with small independent publishers, and her second went on to be released in the US. Her first, A New Map of the Universe, was shortlisted for the WA Premier's Book Awards. Annabelle self-published the digital interactive novel and app, The Ark, in 2014. Annabelle holds a PhD in writing from Edith Cowan University and is an Australia Council Creative Fellow. She is currently working on her fourth novel. Jane Rawson's latest novel, From the Wreck, won the 2018 Aurealis Award for Best Science Fiction Novel and was longlisted for the 2018 Miles Franklin Award. Her other novels include A Wrong Turn at the Office of Unmade Lists and the novella Formaldehyde, which won the Cesia Viva la Novella Prize. She is the co-author of the handbook Surviving and Living with Climate Change. Her short fiction has been published widely, and her day job involves writing about energy. Welcome to The First Time.
Thank you.
I'm so ridiculously thrilled to have you both in the studio, partly because I saw you speaking last night and you are delightful together, even though I know you haven't met each other that many times in real life.
Thank you.
But also because Catherine and I, when we started thinking about this project, were influenced by your amazing blog series, What to Expect When You're Expecting a Book, because of your total candor and frankness about speaking about what it was like to publish a book and all the ins and outs of it, and especially the practicalities. So I want to start, though, by asking you about your first times, because that's what we do here. And Annabelle, I'm going to start with you. Mm-hmm. Tell us, how did your first book come to be published?
I wrote A New Map of the Universe as part of my PhD in creative writing. And at the end of that, UWA Publishing had not published any fiction for adults for a long time, and they decided that they were going to launch a new kind of imprint for literary fiction, and they put a call out to universities. And my PhD supervisor said to me, you should send your book to that. And I didn't really know anything about publishing at that point. I hadn't done any research or really thought about it at all. And I just trusted him and I said, okay. And so I sent it off and they got back to me literally 3 days later.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
The dream.
Yeah, the dream. Terri-Ann
White.
Also,
this is what it's like.
Yeah, Terri-Ann White said, I've read it, I loved it, I would like to publish it, but it's not just up to me, I have to run it by some people, I'll get back to you. And then 4 months passed, and then she said, got in touch with me again and said, yes, I've run it by those people and they really liked it too. Having said that, in general, the quality of the manuscripts we received was not what we hoped. And so we're kind of casting the net a bit wider and seeing, you know, what else is out there. And but we'll probably publish it. But it's looking good. But, you know, watch this space. And I waited another 4 months. And then around that point, the Melbourne Writers Festival was on. And I was living in Melbourne then. And I went to a session where the main, you know, top head honcho editor from Penguin was speaking, and it was about getting published, and it was super depressing. He said, at any given time, 4,000 manuscripts are doing the rounds in Australia.
Oh, God.
Right, and of those, only 4 will get published. And I think everyone's, all the people in the audience just practically slumped onto the floor. And I went home and I was like, oh, this is ridiculous. And then literally the next day I got a letter from UWA Publishing saying, yeah, we want to publish your book.
Oh, so relief. Like, well, yeah, blessed relief.
I got the letter at the office because I'd been moving house when I submitted. And so I had given them my work address. So I got this letter at work and I literally ran into the main office and just screamed my head off. It's like,
that is the moment. That is the joyful moment.
It was. It very much was.
That's great. And Jane, what about you? What about your first time?
Well, my first published book was not the first book that I wrote. Formaldehyde was the first book that I wrote, and I wrote that in the year 2000 and then tried for like 10 years to get it published and totally failed.
Because people didn't want to look at it, because they said there's no market for this.
It was, well, firstly, it was a novella, a longer novella than it ended up being, but it was like 52,000 words at the time. It wasn't very good, is also, I mean, retrospectively, I can see that now. You finish a thing and you're like, oh my God, this is brilliant and I'm a genius and I'm going to send it to everybody and it'll be published in no time. And I was also living in the US, so I was querying US agents, small US publishers. No one wanted it. and then when I moved back to Australia, I tried a few here and yeah, basically got a whole bunch of no replies and standard rejection forms. But then I made friends with some other people who were writers and who had started their own small publishing companies. And we started doing National Novel Writing Month together. And I wrote A Wrong Turn at the Office of Unmade Lists over 2 sessions of National Novel Writing Month. And I think this was the first time I had known people who had published things. They weren't, you know, they weren't publishing books or anything, but they were getting short stories published and that kind of thing. So based on that tiny amount of information that it is possible and not much else, I basically Googled agents in Australia and got a list off the internet of agents in Australia and just started sending that out to agents, all of whom either didn't reply to me or sent me a standard rejection letter.
Okay.
And then I tried things like Penguin's open submission period that they would have like one day a month, nothing back from them. And then I tried Sleepers because they were friends of mine and I was like, oh, they might like it. And I'd read Stephen Amsterdam's book and I was like, oh, this is not too dissimilar to the kind of thing I'm doing. And they were really supportive. They were the first people who got back to me with actual feedback, who said, you know, we really like this. We're not going to publish it. Here's some things you could do that won't make us publish it, but will make it a better book. So maybe give that a go. And I had to ask them all sorts of dumb questions because I didn't know what any of those things meant. I'd never studied writing. So when they said it has kind of a flat effect, I was like, what is that?
What does that even mean?
What does that
but
even
really
mean?
Useful
yeah,
feedback.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, yeah. And after that, I went to a book launch at Transit Lounge. Again, a friend of a friend whose book was being launched, and her book was weird as hell, like so weird. It's still one of the weirdest books I've ever read. And I was like, all right, well, I don't know, maybe these guys would be interested. Oh, I'd also had a rejection from a firm at that point too, who were like, no, too weird.
If it's too weird too for weird. A firm.
It was too weird. They were like, we like the dystopian aspect, but the magical realism stuff, no. Give it a rest. You ruined your book, basically.
Oh, no. Yeah. My goodness.
And so, yeah. So I was like, all right, this guy's clearly open to weird things. And I sent it to him. He said, look, I'm not taking submissions at the moment, but I really like the title, so I'll give it a read.
Good title, people. Here is your advice. Yes. You need a good title.
And then like 3 months later, I got an email from him and I started reading it. And I was like, this is a weird rejection letter. Wait a second. This is not a rejection letter. Because Barry is so offhand. He's just like, oh yeah, I reckon we could probably fit this into the schedule like maybe October next year.
Oh my goodness.
That works for you.
I can see why you had to read that back.
No sort of congratulations. We would love to publish. It was just like, yeah, of course I'm publishing it. How are these dates for you? And then a bit of chat about some other books he's publishing.
Run screaming into the office?
I was at home and I just sort of sat there and stared at it for a while. Closed my email and looked around. Of it, opened it again, and was like, no, this seems to be a real thing.
Wow.
And just kind of went, oh.
And Transit Lounge then went on to publish your next
novel. Yes, so they've published three of my books.
Oh, yeah.
So my nonfiction and my current novel, if you will, From the Wreck. Yeah.
From both of those stories, there's a sense that the community, whether it be the kind of community that you might meet at festivals or through universities or the writing community at large, played a pivotal kind of role in getting your books published. Who helps in that way along the road? Like who helps you get your work out there?
I've been thinking about this and I do feel like compared to who I know and what I know now, I knew nobody and nothing, essentially. Really, all I had were a couple of friends who had had short stories published and an awareness that it was possible to get something published. I didn't know that there were writer centres. I didn't know there were formal writing groups. I didn't know there were writers' journals. I had no idea about things like The Lifted Brow or Mianjin or anything like that. None of that was visible to me. All I knew about was novels published by big publishers. That was it. And how to get from me to them. Having not done a writing course or anything.
It seemed impossible.
It didn't feel impossible because I had had a lot of experience in my life of just keep asking for things. Yep. Just keep putting yourself forward. Eventually something, you'll figure it out eventually. You can figure this out. But it didn't really occur to me that there were people who could help you to figure this out.
Yeah.
I thought I just had to do it myself.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people do come up via the other way, come through the writing community as young writers or as emerging writers and come into it that way. And so they have a lot more information.
This is probably partly because I grew up in Canberra where that was not a thing. And I lived there till I was 27 and then moved to San Francisco, was not aware of any of that there because I moved there as an adult and then came to Melbourne. And Melbourne was the first place I first started to become aware that there is such a thing as a writing infrastructure.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
What about you, Annabelle?
In some ways, my experience was the same as Jane's. I didn't really know people or know anything because it was so long ago. It was before the internet. So there weren't the internet existed, but people weren't using it way they do now. So I wasn't like Googling all writers groups. And also because I did my PhD, I was enrolled in WA, but I moved to Melbourne. And so I was kind of separated from that sense of community. And I did actually volunteer at the Victorian Writers' Centre, but I didn't make any connection between the book I was writing and the Victorian Writers' Centre.
Interesting.
Oh, I wonder if I could perhaps use some contacts that I've made here. It was kind of, to me, those two things were completely unconnected. And I wasn't part of a community in any sense. My supervisor was everything. I mean, when I was writing my book, doing it through a PhD was just amazing because he was my editor as I went along.
Yeah.
So he asked me questions. And so by the time I got to the end of it, I knew I had a publishable manuscript because he was saying to me all along, no, 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 or yes, yes, yes. And then he's the one that told me about the opportunity. I don't really know what I would have done if he hadn't told me about that. I suppose I would have. I mean, I knew about the Vogel. I had submitted to the Vogel.
Okay.
So I was kind of, there were a few things that were very well known that I knew about. But otherwise, I really have no idea. I don't think I was as resourceful as Jane. So.
And certainly not as much as you are now. You're both such key members of your community now. Mm. And interesting, Annabelle, that you said about being before the internet, because I have to ask you to tell us the story of how you two met, which was on the internet. I don't know how you want to tell this story, but please go for it.
I think we should do it as we did it last night. What do you think?
Sounds good. We'll practice that.
So I saw a book at the library. I hadn't heard of the author, Jane Rawson, at that time. I thought it had a super cool cover and I really loved the title. As you said, it's a great title. And so I picked it up. I took it home. I started reading it. I didn't really enjoy it, the part that I read. And maybe it was just that I wasn't in the right mood at the time. I'm ruthless. So I'll read 20, 30 pages of a book and whoosh, no thanks.
Not, be warned, not for listeners.
Me. Yeah. And I had started using Goodreads. And for some reason, I don't know, part of my brain wasn't switched on. I decided I would follow the Goodreads star rating system, which was 5 stars was amazing. 1 star was I didn't like it. I mean, of course, in real life, 1 star means that was a piece of crap. But I wasn't really interpreting that way. I was interpreting literally.
In a different way.
Yeah.
You can try and explain it however you want, Annabelle.
I didn't think it was a piece of crap. I just wasn't into it. Yeah. And so then I went, okay, 1 star. And then I forgot all about it. And then some time later, I don't know how much, I started interacting with this person on Twitter called Frippit. And yes, now over to you, Frippit.
Well, I, like any obsessive first-time author and also still now, checked my Goodreads reviews pretty much every day to see if anyone had reviewed me. And I had actually, before Annabelle reviewed my book on Goodreads, I had seen her perform at Melbourne Writers' Festival. I'd gone along to scope out. I also had to do a little performance at Melbourne Writers' Festival. I'd never really been much, and so I just wanted to see what it was like. And it so happened, coincidentally, that Annabelle's was the session I went to. And I was like, oh, she seems really interesting. Her book seems really good. A little while later, I'm on Goodreads. I'm like, oh, she gave my book a 1-star review.
I feel so bad.
But I actually didn't feel bad. I was just really curious because normally with those, you know, you can see right away, you're like, oh, this person doesn't like my kind of books. They're not my kind of person. That's cool. I was like, but she seemed like my kind of person. So I was determined to find out more about her. So I deliberately made friends with her on the internet. I was like, no, I definitely like her. She didn't like my book. I wonder why. And eventually I got up the nerve to be like, so that time you gave me a 1-star review, what should I do differently? Why was my book bad? And she was like, oh shit.
Well, I hadn't even connected the person that I was talking to on Twitter and eventually off Twitter on email and stuff. I didn't even realize you were the person who'd written that book. And then I was just like, oh!
This has all been an elaborate setup to bring me down. But it wasn't. I genuinely was just curious. I weirdly had no hurt feelings about it.
That's amazing. Yeah. To this day, my husband refers to Jane as 1 star. So I'll say like, oh, blah, blah, blah. I had a great conversation with Jane today. He's like, who's Jane? He can never remember. And then I go 1 star and he goes, oh, yeah.
Yeah, I totally know. And clearly it was the beginning of a beautiful collaboration.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And I think we're kind of complementary in that way, in that you are much more ruthless about things than I am. And I'm a lot more, I should be nice to them. And it's good having someone around who can be like, no, you didn't like it and it was bad. That's okay.
You need people like that in your circle.
Yeah.
I do just want to say, though, that I did really love From the Wreck. So I'm not like a detractor from Jane's talent.
Well noted. I want to ask you about your advice to writers about how to use social media, because we talk about this a lot with other writers and people have different opinions on it. You two have obviously benefited from this particular fantastic collaboration. What do you advise people to do?
I think it's important to be on the internet at least a little bit. So you either need a very simple website, or you need to be on Twitter, or you need to be on Facebook. You need to be at least somewhere. But you certainly don't need to be everywhere. And being everywhere takes a huge amount of time and energy. And a writer, a Perth writer called H.Y. Hannah, she told me this brilliant acronym. It's WIBO. Have you heard of that?
No, I haven't. But
would
tell us.
I be better off writing? Question that you can ask yourself. James,
yes,
in the fetal position now. So should I spend an hour writing this blog post or would I be better off writing? And based on her kind of number crunching, producing more books and getting them out there is a better way to sell books than trying to sell them through being on social media.
Okay, interesting. So that's about selling books and that data. Mm-hmm. Jane.
Well, the advice I give to people when they're starting out who ask me, what should I do and how should I do this more often? Because most people are, to some extent, on social media now, but they're like, how do I do this as a writer? My advice is usually treat it like you're at a party and you don't know anyone.
Yep.
You've got to be a little bit brave, but don't be super pushy and boring.
Yep.
Just, you know, if someone's talking about a thing you're interested in, it's okay to just hop in and pipe up and be like, oh yeah, that's something similar happened to me, but blah, blah, blah. Just treat it like they're humans and you're in a place with other humans. And after a while, you get to know people a bit more and then you can be a bit more upfront. You can start your own conversations and say, hey, I want to talk about this thing and see if anyone wants to talk to you. But for me, it's always been, it's a place for conversations. It's a place for talking with people about stuff. It's not a place for, and look, it mostly is a place for just going on and going, I did this good thing, look at this good thing. But that's not a very satisfying way to use it. It's not a very productive way to use it. Most people don't want to see that. They don't care. So for me, it's really very little about promoting my work, though I do use it for that as well. I have a responsibility to my publisher and people who've organized events and so on. It's mainly about meeting other writers and having writers to talk to and meeting people also who are interested in the kinds of things I write books about, who I can talk to about the content. And those might be scientists, environmentalists.
That's really interesting because I think watching you both on Twitter, you can see that you're not scared of being in conversations. And I think for people new to Twitter or sometimes people are really worried about kind of just putting that first toe in and saying, oh, I can't speak to them. Like they don't know who I am or I'm not cool enough to be in that gang.
The great thing about Twitter is, yes, there are definitely people who are cooler than you, but you're usually wrong about who they are, I think. And it's very rarely the people who are heaps more famous than you. Often the people who are heaps more famous than you are totally happy to talk to you about stuff. There are some people who are just exceptionally good at Twitter and very cool at Twitter. And you're never going to crack those people. They're too good for you. But you don't know who they are.
You don't know who they are.
Just feel free to talk to your favorite writer. That's what's cool about it. Like, your favorite writer is on there. And you can just go, hey, sup? And they might say, yeah, not much.
Yeah, and
there you go.
They really sometimes do.
We're all procrastinating from writing. So, yeah.
We are. There's a little world community out there.
Yeah.
And I should note, too, that Jane and Annabelle talk heaps about this in the blog series, What to Expect When You're Expecting. And I want to ask you about that as well, because clearly from the event you were at last night as well, you have hit this particular nerve with writers and maybe other creatives in that idea of talking very frankly about money and art and how you sell books. And I've noticed this in other things, the Starving Artist podcast, even the Pineapple Project that the ABC has put out, people kind of taking control a bit of their career and and how it is. What do you think that is, or what's been the response that's coming to you from the blog series?
I would say the overwhelming response is, thank God someone is finally being honest about these things. What a relief it is to hear that other writers are just as unsuccessful as I perceive myself to be. And that, so a $5,000, $10,000, $20,000 advance is not the norm. It's actually a crazy exception. Phew! You know, I'm not just a giant loser. I'm actually quite normal and I'm probably, in fact, doing okay. I think that's been the overwhelming response. I think also just in terms of the people we've asked to contribute, the feeling is people want to tell the truth about this, but they didn't know that it was okay. And we don't know if it's okay either.
No.
We're just going to do it anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I keep waiting to see. Every time I do it, I'm like, are there going to be repercussions for this?
I think we're on a blacklist, to be honest. Like,
yeah,
I think publishers probably.
Okay, so from publishers, that's who you're thinking.
Well,
that
I guess that is usually my main worry. When I think about who could this information hurt who isn't me, it's not just my information to give out. I'm also giving out my publisher's information, essentially. When I say, I have sold this many books, this is how much money I've made, I'm telling you how many books Transit Lounge has sold.
Yep.
So far, I don't know, Barry doesn't spend a lot of time on the socials. He might not know I'm doing this, but I think he does, and I don't think... And I work with a publisher who is super upfront and honest and open about anything I ask him and has never made me feel like I can't ask a thing or say a thing. So, yeah, I guess I'm lucky in that respect. I don't know what it would be like if I was with a different publisher who may see that information as commercial in confidence or something like that.
Yep.
But, yeah, as far as how it affects me, I'm like 90% comfortable with telling people this is how it is for me. I do have little feelings of people looking at it and thinking, oh, that is so low. You are such a loser. But what are you going to do?
And as you say, Annabelle, you're helping a whole lot of other people with those losery feelings that they've got going on inside.
Yeah, and I think as well, because we generally present it within a context of, look, we're all losers together here. It's not just like I'm a loser, but actually what you think of as being a loser is a kind of in fact, probably a benchmark for literary fiction or weird fiction especially.
Yeah, mm. yeah.
In one of the posts, you talk specifically about festivals, and I want to ask you about this. Can you tell us some of the festivals you've been invited to or you've attended and what those experiences have been like? Jane.
Sure. Look, my favourite festival I have attended is one of the most mainstream white bread festivals of all of them. And so I feel a little embarrassed to say, but Adelaide Writers Week was so awesome. I had such a good time at Adelaide Writers Week, partly because they scheduled my events, 3 events over 5 days.
Oh, and thank you, Adelaide Writers Week.
I know. And so, you know, I fly in, they put me up in a nice hotel. I get to just do these 3 events. I can go to other events. I can hang out in Adelaide. It's like a holiday in a city I really like for 5 days that I'm getting paid for. And I get to talk about books the whole time. It was just the best. And, you know, all the authors are in the same hotel together. You're running into people all the time. You're in the queue behind famous people. I saw Alan Hollinghurst walking down Rundle Mall late one night looking lost and lonely. I was like, that's not something I expected to happen in my life. yeah, it was really, really great. But other than that, I think my favourite festivals have been small regional festivals. Bendigo, Albury, what do they call it, right around the Murray.
Yep.
Yeah, those kind of ones where you're in a small place with all the other writers. You're basically all just going to each other's events because there's nothing else to do, really, is there?
And that's the joy of being at a festival.
Yeah, exactly. And so, yeah, you get to meet lots of people. And, like, some of my best writer friends, like Jessie Cole, are people I've been just thrown together with at these sorts of things. So
that's fantastic. Annabelle, what about you, your favourites?
I really love Perth Writers Festival. It is my hometown, but it's not just that. There's a kind of magical feeling that the organisers have created there. They've got a massive green room and it's got all these couches and everyone hangs out in there and sits around chatting. And
delightful.
It's just so friendly. And it's also at UWA, which is a beautiful campus. And my friend Emma Chapman, when she did it for the first time, she was like, this is like a fairy grotto.
Oh, and that's so nice.
It is quite gorgeous. And a lot of writers who I've spoken to at Perth have said, this is one of the nicest festivals I've ever been to.
I have heard that from lots of writers.
It is really special. I got to go to Ubud Festival a couple of years ago, and that was pretty amazing.
Also very delightful.
They had really incredible speakers. I got to stand next to Michael Chabon at a party and talk to him. And I was just like, I was almost fainting.
Yes.
Oh, he's so handsome. And he was also just charming and nice.
Yes,
and,
I feel like we might have been at the same Ubud Writers Festival. Yeah. I feel like I had a similar experience.
And also they organise so many things for the guests because they don't pay their guests. But they put you up in a nice hotel with a pool and then they give you a dinner or some kind of event every night and it's just fabulous. And you're in Bali and you're just like, this is the life I dreamed of.
That is the thing about festivals. Those are the brief moments when you're like, this is what I thought it would be like being a writer.
Exactly.
Most of the time it is not like this.
We should put a note out there to any of the festivals. If you would like any of us to come and check your festivals out for you, we of course will do that.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Talk about them at length on any kind of podcast.
Live tweet them and...
all of the above.
Blog about
them. Yeah, we can do all of that.
Yeah.
Jane, you wrote in one of the blog posts that you saw a sports psychologist before some of the festivals that you did. What did the sports psych tell you?
Well, yeah, I went to see someone because in 2015 I had 2 books coming out at the same time, essentially within a month of one another. I knew I was going to have to do quite a few events. I had struggled with some that I'd had to do for my first novel. And I also have, a reasonable amount of anxiety as well. I was like, all right, it's time to get on top of this stuff. I don't want this to derail my experience of being an author. I want to enjoy these things. I don't want to dread them. So yeah, I basically went to my GP and was like, I would like to see a psychologist about my anxiety. And she was like, well, maybe you could go this guy, this guy, this guy. And this one was a sports psychologist. And I was like, you know what? I think that is what I want to try. So I went and talked to him. And yeah, he was extremely results oriented.
Yep.
He didn't want to talk about my childhood very much or anything like that. He was like, he said, you know, I'm trained in Freudian stuff. We can do it if you want. I was like, no, it's fine. It's all
right. Stick with the results.
I want to go forward. So yeah, a lot of what he taught me was mostly just like handy tips for how to deal with anxiety in the moment, things to do to ground yourself, but also a lot of talking about why is it that you think this way about it? Is there a different way you could think about it? Could you stop waiting for everyone outside you to validate you? Could you have a little think about all the things that you've actually achieved yourself that are within your control and focus on those a bit more? So yeah, it was actually really great for writing and for all aspects of my life, and really good too at putting aside that constant nagging voice of you're no good, you don't deserve this, your writing is terrible, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Really just great, clear advice about being able to say, hey, shut up, look, I'm busy here right now, I got to write this thing.
Let me do my
thing. We'll discuss this a little later, okay? Over dinner, maybe.
Yes. That's great advice. Annabelle, there's this fear, and I certainly had this fear my first time in green rooms, that everyone was way cooler and way more famous than me, and I was terribly scared of just making a dick of myself, really. So how do you approach people? How do you make friends at writers' festivals?
I think the main thing is just to sit down and say hi to someone and say, hi, what's your name? It doesn't matter if you don't know who they are and they're really famous. The very first person I spoke to at my first writers festival, I sat down, I said to a lady, hi, how are you? She said, good, how are you? And I said, oh, you know, what are you doing here today? And she said, I'm talking about this, this, and this. And we were having a chat, and then she showed me this picture she'd drawn on a paper bag, on the vomit bag from the plane. And she said, which of these babies' faces do you like the best? And I said, you're not Alison Lester, are you? And she was like, yes, I am. And I was like, oh my gosh. And so my very first conversation was just so lovely and easy. And I think that kind of made me, these people aren't out to get you. Every writer has imposter syndrome. Almost certainly everyone else in the room is thinking the same thing that you're thinking, which is, I'm not cool enough. I don't belong here. I heard this wonderful thing Brené Brown said. She said, if your goal in a situation of any kind is to be yourself, it's impossible to fail. Mm-hmm. Whereas if your goal is to impress someone or put something in front of someone, then you're almost destined for it to be a flop.
Yeah.
Whereas if you say, I'm just going to go in there and I'm going to be myself, well, you know, that's all you have to do. Most people want to have a chat about writing. A few people who are really famous clearly don't.
Yeah.
And that's okay. So I did have a weird experience at Perth Writers Festival. I was sitting on a couch. I stood up to get something out of my bag and someone sat down in my seat. And the only seat left was next to China Mieville. And I was like, I can't sit next to China Mieville. He's so hot.
I know.
And he's so cool. And he's so famous. But then I was just like, God, it's going to look really weird if I don't sit there. And so I just sat down. I was like, hi, how are you? He's like, yeah, I'm good. How are you? And then I just left him alone because it was clear he didn't really feel like having a big yarn. And it was fine.
Okay.
Oh, I would die.
Is there anything that we should really not do when we go to writers' festivals?
Oh, don't be rude to the staff and the volunteers. Treat them with respect. They are working their asses off. And especially the volunteers, they're doing it out of the goodness of their hearts and for fun. So be really nice to them, because actually they talk to the staff as well. So if you're an asshole, that's going to get back to the people organising the festival. So don't be snooty.
Yeah, excellent. And accept that there are reasons that they're making you do things that you might think are unreasonable, like be here half an hour beforehand or follow me right now to this place. Just do it. Don't be a diva and be like, actually, I'm having a wonderful conversation with China Mieville right now. I'll be there when I'm ready. Just go.
The other thing I would say is, because quite often right before a session, the chair is talking to the panelists, don't interrupt people who are in the middle of that, because they're trying to concentrate and move through some preparation. So it's not the right time to say, oh my gosh, you know, so-and-so, I am such a fan. Look, you can certainly do that I'm such a fan thing, and I totally have done it. But you do it when they're kind of milling around at the coffee table, not when they're actually obviously involved in what looks like a meeting.
That's really good advice.
That's excellent advice. You have such good practical advice.
She's great.
Try not to drink too fast at the parties would be my main advice. This is my advice for myself every single time. Then I get there, then I'm really nervous, then I drink really fast, then I'm like, oh, I should never have said that thing.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Writers Festival regret of all the things that you said.
I think that's how you make all your friends.
It's true. It's true. The people who stick with you after that are the ones that you're like, oh, no, we're probably going to be friends.
We're going to be best friends now forever.
Yeah.
Last night you spoke at your event about hustling your own festival invites.
Yeah.
How have you gone about doing that?
I have like a writer's CV that I've prepared. It lists my books that I've published, what they're about, my other external experience, like jobs that I've had that might be interesting, where I've done interesting things, and a list essentially of topics that I feel like I'm good to talk about. And some of those might be quite peripheral to the books themselves, not obvious things. And I try to give a lot of alternatives. And I also list experience that I've had with other festivals, and particularly chairing experience I've had, because festivals are often keen. They might want to bring you along, but they're like, oh, you know, we've got to fly you here and put you up. How can we get our money's worth out of you? And if you're like, I can chair a couple of sessions as well, then you're a more appealing prospect generally. And so I essentially talk to my publisher. I say, are you pitching me to any of these writers' festivals? He's like, oh, yeah, you know, I've sent a pack to Byron and Sydney and they don't want any of them. like I said, my publisher, always
don't,
very frank.
Don't sugarcoat it.
Yeah, no, he never does. He's always just like, yeah, no, they don't want any of my writers. I'm like, all right, well, that includes me. Okay. And then just let him know, yeah, I'm okay, so I'm going to send stuff to these guys. And he's like, yeah, cool, fine, let me know if anything comes of it.
I love that you're actually allowed to do that. Like what I think people, when they start out, they think, oh, there's rules to this publishing world and I'm not sure what I'm allowed to do. But you're kind of saying you have permission to do this yourself
well,
as well.
Well, I'm about to be published by Picador in the UK as well. And now I'm back in that position of being a new author because I'm like, this is a new publisher. It's a new country. I have no idea how they do things there. I don't know what I'm allowed to ask. So I'm trying to remind myself that just ask. They're not going to cancel your contract because you asked a question.
Mm. Having said that, I haven't found that sort of cold pitching to festivals very effective at all. I've found that most of my festival invites have come from a connection. So Ubud, I went to the festival with a friend who was on the program and she introduced me to the organizers and then I followed up with an email. And I've done that for people at Perth Writers Festival. So I've contacted the organizers and said, oh, you might be interested in this person and they're a great chair and they can talk about this and I've seen them perform and they're fantastic. And that, I think, often helps. I mean, I've pitched again and again to, for example, Adelaide Writers Week, and I've listed the Booker Prize winners that I've interviewed and I've put a link to the, you know, session that's on RN. And I've had friends who are very high profile writers say to them, yes, how about Annabelle? And nothing has come of it.
Yeah.
So it you can work your butt off and sometimes it still doesn't lead to anything.
Totally. And I actually have no idea now I think about how I got onto Adelaide Writers Week because everyone reports that is a closed shop.
Yes. Forget I've it. Heard that
there,
too.
There is no way in.
Wow.
I don't know what happened. Someone somewhere must have spoken
the magic.
For me.
If you are the person who got Jane Rawson into Adelaide Writers Week,
I've got a prize for you.
Jane, you just mentioned the upcoming publication of From the Wreck in the UK with Picador.
Woo.
And Annabelle. I know, so exciting. And Annabelle, Whiskey Charlie Foxtrot has been published in the US and actually has these phenomenal sales, like 75,000 copies of the book.
Yes.
I wanted to ask you both, how did those international rights sales come about and what have they meant for you? So maybe Annabelle, we'll start with you.
Sure. So my publisher, Fremantle Press, sold the rights for me. They did it through Frankfurt Book Fair, I'm going to say. I think it was Frankfurt. Really amazing, actually, because Clive went to Frankfurt, didn't sell it. And I thought, okay, that's it.
That's it.
The next year he went again and he still pushed this book that was over a year old. And that year he sold it to them.
Oh.
So that was just amazing. He so believed in my book. And he was so behind it. He was like, I'm not giving up on this. I'm going to keep going with this. And he sold it to a small American publisher called Sourcebooks, who are outside of Chicago. And yeah, that's how the deal came about. He had a relationship with them. He gave it to someone there. She loved it. And it was like, boom, he sent me an email saying I've sold the rights and your advance is $5,000. I was like, I actually emailed him back and I said, Clive, I think you might have accidentally put an extra zero on. I wasn't even kidding. And he was like, no, it is actually 5,000. So that was just like, woo, that was so exciting.
And Annabelle, you traveled over.
I did.
To do some publicity.
I did.
Of course, your publisher doesn't pay for you to do that.
No.
So what was that like?
Oh, it was so much fun. I was saying last night, the best thing about it was my publisher really treated it seriously as like a mini book tour. So they organized a town car to pick me up at the airport, and I had my name in the window. And I had this driver that had like a uniform on and stuff.
Celebrity.
Yeah. And then I got in the car and I was like, I'm starving. Can we go through Burger King drive-thru? It was so wrong. Anyway, they put me up at a nice hotel and they organized these really lovely book events. And I spoke to a local radio station, and they made me so welcome. They took me to the local Target store, which is the reason my book sold so many copies in the US, is because Target chose it as their book of the month. And they have this kind of book club thing, and they put it in every store and they have a special display. So then we went to the local Target and we took photos of ourselves with the book, and they were so welcoming and wonderful. It was brilliant fun.
That's great. Jane, what about you?
I don't really know what happened. It's very complicated. My publisher owns my overseas rights, same with Annabelle's. So the theoretical way it works is, yep, your publisher sends your book to some book fairs, or they pitch to various agents and publishers. And my publisher had tried all those things, and we had had some very blanket rejections on From the Wreck, mostly along the lines of, I'm not even opening this. This is speculative fiction. We don't publish speculative fiction. Yeah. So, and like I said, you know, Barry, very frank, would just tell me that. He'd be like, oh... And we had one US agent who read it, was like, the writing is very nice. What is the second voice in this? Is this a horse?
Well,
and Barry just forwarded that.
Oh, gosh. Sort of
an octopus.
And I was like, can we put that on the cover?
I was going to say, can you frame awesome. That one?
That is awesome.
So I also represent myself to overseas publishers and agents once Barry's had his go and has moved on to something else. So I had sent it to numerous agents in the US and the UK and had zero response pretty much from everyone. Eventually, Simon Savage, who is a book yes. blogger in the UK, picked it up. I think because Sarah, my friend Sarah, whose last name suddenly escapes me.
Schmidt.
Thank you. Sorry, Sarah. Sarah Schmidt.
We've got you back.
Had recommended it to him because they're friends. He had a look at it. He loved it. He raved about
he
it
raved.
On his YouTube
Let's
channel.
Let's just say this again.
He raved about it.
As
took the UK publishing industry to task for having not picked it up. Was like, this book should be easy to get. I can't believe you're depriving us of it, blah, blah, blah. So at that point, I got a few publishers coming to me and going, what is this? And it also gave me an angle to pitch again to a few other people who I hadn't yet approached and say, look, see, this guy thinks it's good. You know this guy, right? He's a big deal.
He's a big deal.
But in the end, what actually happened was James Bradley, who is also my friend, was like, oh, yeah, I know one of the publishers at Picador. He's a good mate. Do you want me to recommend your book to him? I
was like, why did you say that 2 years ago, dude?
He was busy with other stuff.
Thank you, James Bradley.
He basically contacted Ravi and was like, oh, I think you'd like my book. And then he said, yeah, he says he'll have a look at it. So I emailed him and we chatted back and forth. And I had this idea that this guy was like, oh, some poor intern they'd put onto like dumb sci-fi books or something, and was chatting idly with him back and forth on email. And eventually when he said he was potentially interested in it, I was like, I should Google him. I'm like, oh, this is the kind of publisher who gets in the newspaper when he signs a book. This is a guy who keeps signing up Booker Prize winners. And at that point I was like, oh, this is extremely exciting. And yeah, and then they said they wanted it. And he's been so excited about the book and about having an octopus alien protagonist. He just loves it. And he's such a lovely person. It's been very nice.
That's great. Will you go over, Jane?
I don't know, because although for a long time Ravi was answering all my emails, he's now stopped.
Okay. Yeah. Ravi, get back on the email if you're listening
so,
to
yes,
this.
So, yes, this is a question I have for them. Are we having a launch? Do I go over? But it's not till like mid next year, and so I just need to calm down.
You must go.
I would really like to go. So, yeah.
What I love about the way that both of you are speaking about it too, and Jane, especially that story, is you are so active in that process. Like, I think especially new writers or people who are being published for the first time might think that they've got to sit back and just wait till their publisher does all the things. But you're just saying, no, I need to work for my book too.
The combination of nervousness about it, and also, and I've had this too, the idea that if your book is good, people will come to you, right? It's a good book. Mm-hmm. That has been, I think, the biggest thing I have learned is that you do not get anything unless you ask for it. And you've got to ask over and over and over again. There are a billion manuscripts out there. There are a billion books that get published. There's no reason for anyone to notice your book, even if it's absolutely brilliant. You've got to keep telling people.
Yes, you've got to be like a person dressed up in a hot dog suit with like a banner.
Yeah.
Like, woohoo, here's my book, everybody.
Yeah. 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 And yeah, no matter how many times you tell them, they'll have forgotten again straight away. So
I think as well, because a lot of small independent publishers are very under-resourced.
Oh, yeah.
So they will do everything they can to get your book out into the world. But they've also got, you know, within a month, the next book has come along and they've got to be doing all that for the next book. So they're always trying their best, but they don't have a massive marketing department who's just, that's all they're working on. They're really busy and it's hard. And you have to work your connections like you do in any industry.
Yeah.
That's sort of awkward at first though, isn't it? You're published by this person and gosh, do you think, oh, it's awkward. You feel so awkward asking, but actually you realise that no one minds you asking.
Yeah.
And now I said to Jane, do you want to send your manuscript to the agent that I'm talking to in the US? Yeah. And I think they might like it because they like my weird book.
Yeah, and that was actually great. That was one of the few agents who I think actually read some of it and got back to me, like with a personal letter, because there had been that connection there. So they didn't want it, but they at least replied.
It gets it off the slush pile, which is a big part of the process.
And you both do this so well as well. Kind of shout outs to your own literary community. I've seen you do it on Twitter. Annabelle, you do it on the blog as well for other writers. Jane, you're also involved in, and I've practiced saying it, and now I'm not going to be able to pronounce it.
Kanganulapo.
That's exactly it, the Experimental Australian Writing Collective. How are those connections part of your writing world now, and what do they mean for you?
One of the things I noticed first when I became a published writer was Charlotte Wood and her behaviour. She was active on social media at the time my first book came out, which she no longer is. But I really respected all the effort she made to keep pulling other people up after her, to help people. And I was like, if I ever get to a position where I have some small power and influence, I would like to do that too. I think that's extremely admirable behavior. Don't shut the door behind you after you're in. So I've tried to make sure I help people where I can help people. I tell people that other people have good books when they have good books. And I try to build networks and communities with people so we can help each other out. And because it's fun. It's fun having writer friends.
It really is. It really is.
In terms of my blog series, How to Become a Writer. So when someone I know publishes a book, I usually have them on. They tell their story. I think when I was trying to promote Whiskey Charlie Foxtrot, I was approaching people asking them if I could do something on their blog. And then I realized, oh, it would be nice if someone had asked me. And some people did ask me, and it's so nice to be asked. So then I thought, well, I'll just ask people. And I feel like I'm helping them, but at the same time, I'm helping other readers because they see, oh, look, there's all these different paths to publication. There's all these different ways that people approach writing. There's all these kind of different ways that people come at it. And some people come at it really late in life, and some people do it through university, and some people just do it on their own time and get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and do it for 2 hours a day, and everyone has their different approach. And I feel like it's really valuable for people to know that and to feel like there isn't one way, and if they aren't doing it that way, they're never going to make it. So I feel like it's kind of adding value and perhaps just providing the kind of encouragement that I would have benefited from when I was starting out.
And I think people definitely get that from those as well. I wanted to quickly touch on process. And Jane, Justine Hyde wrote a wonderful profile for you for the Saturday paper. And you said in that your first two fiction manuscripts were fun to write, but as you started to take writing seriously, it became more challenging. Why was that?
I think with the first two, well, I wrote both of the first two as National Novel Writing Month projects. So I was writing fast and hard. They were quirky. They were funny. There's a lot of stuff going on in them. I had a lot of ideas. But when I went to write my next book, I think it was two influences, one of which was I had had not a great critical reception for my earlier books, not great sales. And I felt rejected by the Australian literary industry. I was like, all right, I need to write a different kind of book. If I want to be loved, and let's face it, I want to be loved, then
everyone does.
What I need to do is write the kind of book they want me to write. But the other thing, a much more admirable reason for doing it was I was like, well, look, I'm not going to sell books. I'm not going to make money. I'm not going to be famous. Why am I doing this? I want to get better at it. So let's, you know, let's straight out look back at the old books. What would you like to do differently? What do you want to change? What do you want to get better at? So I kind of wrote myself a list of things, craft things I felt I needed to improve on.
An actual real list.
Yeah, an actual real list.
I love this idea.
And set out to do those as sort of writing tasks for myself that I would achieve while writing this novel.
Have you gone back to that list?
Yeah, yeah. And I did all right. Now I need to write a new list for the next one. And I'm not sure what the list is yet. I need to be more. I'm still totally in love with my last book. And
oh,
I need to
be
a lot more critical of it so I can figure out what I want to do differently for the next one.
There's nothing wrong with it.
I feel like the world's still in love with it.
I have this thing I want to do, which is do something better or different. So, you know, I need to figure out what I didn't do in there that I would like to do next time.
Annabelle, has your experience been similar or different to that?
Quite different. I think my first book was the hardest because I didn't know if I could write a book. So it was the whole way through, I was kind of like, this is too big, this is too hard. The kind of challenge of getting, 80,000 words or something. Actually, I think it might have been 65 or something. But it was just like humongous. It was just like climbing up a mountain. And I constantly would just go, oh, no, I can't do this. I was paralyzed with self-doubt. I would ring my supervisor. I'd say, I'm done, Richard. I can't write another word. I'm not capable of this. I don't have it in me. And he would remind me that I had been here before and I had got past it. And that went on. He was amazing. That's what I say when I say he was my cheerleader. He was just like my psychologist. He was everything. And so I think that paralyzing self-doubt was really the struggle I had with that first book. The second book had its own challenges, but at that point, at least I could say, I can write a book. I know I can write a book because I've done it. I don't know how to write this book, but at least I can do something. And I know that really all I need to do is just keep going. That's all you have to do, just keep going. Of course, there's a lot more to it than that, but that's the first hurdle.
That really is. You've given us so much advice and the listeners already, but part of the reason we're here on the first time is to help Catherine through her very first time. And I wanted to ask you both for a piece of advice that you'd give Catherine as she approaches D-Day, P-Day, publication day, whatever you call it. What would you advise her on getting through this next little period?
My main advice is usually ask for things. Don't be afraid to ask questions and don't be afraid to ask for things for yourself. But the other thing is also don't feel bad that you're going to feel bad some of the time, that it's not going to all be a happy experience. It's perfectly normal to feel weird and maybe upset and maybe wish you'd never done this whole thing. It's just normal. It's all right. You'll get through it. There are fun bits.
Great advice. And Annabelle?
My advice would be to set your expectations extremely low and just to try and enjoy the process, not to say to yourself, I want it to be like this, or I expected it to be like this, but just to say, oh, look, now this is happening, and just to try and enjoy each part of it, because you know, there's only one time that it happens for the first time, and it is pretty cool.
Yeah.
It's very cool. Before I let you both go, I wanted to ask you for a recommendation for your favourite novel by a debut author, be it recent or very old or favourite of all time. Jane, have you got one?
I have a bad memory, it turns out, and so I can only think of two. I'm going to break the rules.
That's okay. Have
come out recently. One of which is Rubik by Elizabeth Tam, a Perth author, which is just so genius for a debut novel. It's implausible that it's so good. She's so smart.
So smart.
And the other is The Book of Dirt by Bram Presser, which you think, do I need to read another Holocaust novel? I surely know. No, you don't. Read this book. It's so good.
Excellent recommendations. And Annabelle?
Mine is a few years old. It's also a Perth writer, Yvette Walker.
Oh, that was my third choice.
Letters to the End of Love. Just a beautiful, beautifully written, just scrumptious, exquisite language and a great meditation. And yeah, it's a wonderful book.
Fantastic. Annabelle Smith and Jane Rawson, thank you so much for being on the first time.
My pleasure. Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. So, Jane Rawson, I'm going to ask you our first time, quick five. For your first time, were you agented or unagented?
Unagented.
Advance or no advance?
No advance.
Overseas territories or just Australia, New Zealand?
Just Australia, New Zealand.
Festival invites or no festival invites?
A couple of little ones, yes.
And do you know how many copies your first book sold?
Yes. Would you like me to tell you?
Yes, please.
It's just gone to reprints like 2 months ago, so it sold a little over 2,000 copies.
Fantastic. I love numbers. Thank you, Jane. Annabelle Smith, for your first time Quick Five, for your first book, were you agented or unagented?
Unagented.
Advance or no advance?
$1,000 advance.
Excellent. Overseas territories or just Australia, New Zealand?
Just Australia, New Zealand.
Festival invites or no festival invites?
Couple of small ones.
And do you know how many copies of your book has sold?
I think about 1,500.
Excellent. Thank you so much. To find out more about Annabelle Smith and Jane Rawson, head to our show notes at thefirsttimepodcast.com, where you'll find links to everything we spoke about in this episode. And let us know how you're enjoying the podcast. You can do that on Twitter or Instagram at thefirsttimepod, or leave a comment at thefirsttimepodcast.com. You've been listening to The First Time Podcast, a podcast about the first time you publish a book. We recorded this episode at RMIT University on the traditional land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. This podcast is produced by Phoebe Ady and Harry Morris. The First Time Podcast is created with the support of Writers Victoria, ACT Writers Centre, and RMIT School of Media and Communication.